Coming up on Tech News Today, why I'm loving Windows 8, why Apple's record sales actually suck, according to analysts, and Samsung rips off Apple by selling phones. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, October 26, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by American Express Bank FSB, offering a high-yield savings account, the perfect complement to help you reach your savings goals. To learn more and open an account online, visit personalsavings.com/online savings, member FDIC. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphones. Find out what your gadget is worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest iPhone at gazelle.com. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/TNT and get a copy of Brandon Sanderson's Legion absolutely free at audible.com/Sanderson. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachar.
I'm Darren Kitchen.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse.
Kablooey!
New sound effect.
Microsoft Windows 8 debuted online and in stores at midnight. Times Square in New York was filled with crowds looking to buy not only the new OS, but new machines running it, including Microsoft's own Surface tablet running Windows RT. Windows Phone arrives next week with a launch event planned for Monday where new features will be announced.
The Digital Millennium Copyright Act now makes it illegal to circumvent digital rights management. When Congress passed the DMCA in 1998, it gave the Librarian of Congress the power to grant exemptions. The latest batch of those, which will be enforced for 3 years, were announced yesterday. So, between now and the end of 2015, there will be five categories of circumvention that'll be allowed under the Librarian's rules, one fewer than the current batch, which was announced in July of 2010. The new exemptions will take effect October 28th, and we will tell you the details of them later in the show.
Apple News Roundup time.
Now,
Apple reported earnings for its fiscal fourth quarter, $36 billion in revenue with the profit of $8.2 billion.
Analysts must be excited.
Of course not. No, earnings per share were a little lower than analysts' expectations. iPad sales were below expectations, even though Apple sold 26% more units compared to the previous year's quarter. They were expecting 17 million. They only sold 14 million. On the Apple earnings call, Tim Cook explained the new iPad mini, saying, "It is not a compromised product like the 7-inch tablets. It's in a whole different league." Speaking of iPads, the iPad mini and fourth generation iPad are up for pre-order. Wi-Fi version ship November 2nd, the rest in mid-November.
Do you guys know who the master of smartphones is?
Metallica?
No, it's actually Samsung. According to Strategy Analytics, Samsung shipped 56.9 million smartphones in the third quarter of 2012. And to put that in perspective, 35% of all smartphones sold on Earth were made by Samsung. No word on Mars. But Apple moved 26.9 million iPhones. And the old king of the hill, Nokia, yeah, only 6.3 million.
A UK judge had ordered Apple to post a statement to its website, making the public aware that the judge found Samsung had not infringed Apple's design. Apple has, in compliance, added a link to the statement to its homepage. It complies to the letter of the law, while also noting the complimentary description of Apple design that the judge gave and mentioning that Samsung has been found to infringe Apple's property in other countries. Apple still has yet to take out advertisements in national newspapers saying that Samsung had not copied its designs.
Basically, we're cooler still.
Yeah.
Samsung posted its fourth straight record quarterly profit of $7.4 billion, with very strong sales of the Galaxy range of phones, although lower sales of memory chips. Analysts expect growth to slow in the next quarter, though, with smartphone sales starting to level off and TV market staying flat. Profit is expected to grow 16% next year. If you compare that to this year, it's quite a bit lower. It was 73%. Samsung said that July through September operating profit almost doubled to 8.2 trillion Korean won, and net profit rose to 6.56 won.
You know, maybe Amazon is regretting its investment in daily deal site Living Social. Amazon's third quarter loss included a charge of $169 million related to its Living Social stake. Now, Amazon invested $175 million in the company back in 2010. The charge means that Living Social has lost 95% of its value.
What a discount.
That's a deal.
HTC fans, shareholders, sit down. If you're driving, pull over. The company released its Q3 earnings report, and there are some serious drops. Compared to Q3 of last year, the revenue dropped 48% and profit declined by 79%. HTC also warned of a rough Q4 as it expects revenue to be approximately $2.05 billion, which is less than its Q3 revenue.
Bloomberg reports Apple is in negotiations to start a streaming music service similar to Pandora. Negotiations are dealing with how to share ad revenue. Sources say a deal could be reached by mid-November, with Apple starting the service in the first 3 months of 2013.
Assassin's Creed, Mass Effect, Skyrim, and other mature games were banned from the European Windows 8 store. But they aren't anymore. Turns out a mismatch in the U.S. and Europe over game ratings led to the game's exclusion outside of North America. Of course, in the U.S., games win a mature rating under the ESRB system. Europe has their own system, which means only adults can buy certain games. Before now, Microsoft operated under basically a blanket ban saying adult-only content is out of the Windows 8 store. Relaxing the rules means that the games can now get into the Windows store and be guaranteed to run on Windows 8, PCs, or tablets.
In the U.S., they actually ruled they were not violent enough, and they had to add more.
Send it back to the devs.
This is actually good for children.
More guns, please. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by American Express Bank, FSB, member FDIC. Think about all the ways you're saving. You're saving money? Well, hopefully you have a little money you can put away. Maybe you're saving up for a home, saving up for a car, just putting some away for an emergency. Whatever your savings needs are, American Express Personal Savings High Yield Savings Account give you a competitive variable interest rate to help you reach your savings goal. You can easily link the savings account to your existing bank account so you don't have to switch banks. Transfer money easily depending on your needs and keep track of your balance by phone or web 24/7. That's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Has no minimums, no fees, and includes great phone support whenever you want to talk to someone. And the account's a great complement to your existing financial tools. So you don't have to change anything that you're doing. Just add a personal savings account. Go to personalsavings.com/online savings. While you're there, open an account. No minimums, no fees, and no need to switch banks. All you need to do is get started today. Let American Express Personal Savings help you reach your savings goals by opening this high-yield savings account offered by American Express Bank, FSB. That's the high-yield savings account at personalsavings.com/online savings, member FDIC. All right, let's get into the celebration of the fact that this is the last day I have to wear this hat.
I think yay!
For the week following the
every other time will be voluntary.
Well, technically, I may choose to win the hat.
Technically, forever. You would have to wear it on Monday as well.
You think I can get away without it?
I mean, we'll why would you want to?
Well,
you want to support a
Ryan Block
winning franchise.
We'll have to rule on this because that's what I lost the bet to. But go Giants, up 2-0. There may not be a reason to wear it. Could get your brooms out, San Francisco fans.
Don't jinx anything.
Meanwhile,
too late.
Let's talk about Windows 8. I installed it this morning. They had their big launch in Times Square. It was crowded. People were partying. Lots of talk in the press about everything rides on this moment for Microsoft, which I find amusing because, as they pointed out on InformationWeek.com, Windows constitutes a smaller share of revenue for Microsoft than apps or server software. But I think that's telling. I think what this is Microsoft's consumer business moment. Not everything riding on it, but Microsoft has been becoming more of an IT company with their enterprise, with their servers. And are they going to follow in the footsteps of IBM and go fully down that or not? This is a big moment for that. If they can get consumers to buy the Microsoft service, buy tablets with Windows RT and upgrade to Windows 8 and love it, then they will continue to dominate in the consumer space. I installed Windows 8 this morning. I wasn't going to. I was too worried because I use my doghouse systems for gaming, and it's also what I use to prep TNT from home. And I decided, what the heck? So I went and I installed it, and it was the easiest Windows install ever.
How long did it take?
It took Let's see. I didn't look at the exact minutes, but I started it up around 7:40 and was done by 8:20, so less than an hour.
Mm-hmm.
With
no problems.
And no issues. There was a funny moment I mentioned on Twitter where it says, we have to uninstall Microsoft Security Essentials. Now, I knew that that's because Windows Defender takes care of that in Windows 8, and so they uninstall the old version of it. But it doesn't really say that. So if you don't know that and you're upgrading, you think, wait, you're removing the protection from viruses from Windows?
Is that a good idea? Did you babysit the actual install? I mean, would you notice that, or could you just like walk away from that? Because I'm sure people are just hitting install and walking away.
No, that is actually one of the points where you had to say, okay, move along. Because it's warning you before you start the install, these are the programs that you're going to have trouble with. They mentioned iTunes in there too. But just to say that your computer authorization is going to change. Not that iTunes won't work. But that this is going to look like a different computer.
Of course, it's a Windows upgrade, though. So afterwards, you spent the next couple hours re-downloading every driver for every piece of hardware you have, right, Tom?
No. In fact, the only driver that it alerted me was the ATI controller. Mm-hmm. It was going to have to be changed. And I'm like, okay, I got to remember to do that. No problem. I'm used to that. After the install, when it rebooted, it immediately said, hey, remember that ATI driver? You want to update that right now? Yeah. And I said, okay. Took care of itself.
Oh, I was about to say you could have upgraded that real easily by putting a GeForce card in.
Okay, GeForce fanboy. but the other thing was, when you start the install, it immediately downloads a little EXE that gets you going without you even having to pay for it.
That's such
a presumptive sell. Like, you're already on your way. And then you put it, I paid by PayPal. They give you that.
So did you pay within the app, or was it back to the website?
You pay within the app. Nice. I mean, it just, it uses the IE engine, but whatever.
That's a good user experience.
It was very smooth. I didn't have any trouble with the install at all. And then once I got to that Metro screen, I'm like, all right, here we go, Metro interface. Not going to like you.
Formerly known as Metro.
Whatever. Yeah. So I clicked the desktop. It took me to the desktop. It looked exactly like the desktop did before I upgraded, except for no start menu, no start button. And in fact, it even launched Opera with the tabs open that I had open before I started the install.
So as soon as you finished installing and you launched the desktop, Opera popped up and you were on the page you were last on, which was upgrade to Windows 8. So did you continue on to upgrade?
So then I did it again. Yeah. No, it was a recursive loop. Upgrading.
So, but are you familiar with it? I mean, did you immediately get out of Metro and the launch program manager?
Yeah, I went Progmon.
Progmon.exe. Yeah. There you go.
I messed around with it. I launched World of Warcraft. Worked fine. That's the main thing that I used that machine for. I launched Chrome. Which is what I used to prep TNT. That worked fine.
So you just stayed in the desktop interface, though.
And you know what? I don't really reboot that machine a lot, so I'll probably... So,
as far as you're concerned, the only thing that's changed is that they took away that little orb.
And I'm like, and somebody on Twitter was like, well, you can buy a start menu from Stardock for $5 if you really miss it. But if I get used to hitting the Windows key and searching for apps, which is how I search for apps in OS X, I press Command Space, and I type the name of the program.
I do that in GNOME 3.
Yeah, it's how I do it in Ubuntu, too. I just go to Dash.
And you're in Unity, so there you go. Hey, are you saying that like all of the desktop operating systems have kind of the same paradigm of launching applications by typing in what you want?
Yeah. I mean, we were talking about that a little bit before the show, right? How much does the operating system matter anymore?
I'm so excited, Tom, that you clicked a thing and you paid some money and now you're able to launch Chrome and World of Warcraft just like you used to be able to.
I know, right? It's like, wait a minute, what did I pay for? Hold on. But it seems fine. Yeah, I just...
Sans the Warcraft.
I just upgraded to 12.10 on Ubuntu 2. That was a seamless upgrade as well. Some people on Twitter are pointing out like OS X's upgrades are seamless as well. But compared to other Windows installs,
Are we in just a boring time of computing where we no longer have to worry about drivers and IRQ settings? I mean, where's the fun anymore?
Yeah, it's porting things to devices they're not supposed to have things running on. That's where the fun is.
Whatever it is, we've got to get Doom running on it.
Yeah. Anyway, absolutely love Windows 8 so far.
Because you haven't been in the Metro screens.
I have been in the Metro screen once. Yes,
that's what you call it, Metro.
The tiled interface, excuse me. The modern UI, whatever they called it.
Aren't you spreading a Windows show? You should know.
It's the tile interface. That's all I keep calling it because they have different names for it on each thing.
Call it what you will. I think you can get used to it. Yeah.
Annoying.
Is there like a terracotta theme for it?
I don't know. Well, that was the one thing is that it actually kept all my settings, kept all my files, the upgrade path from Windows 7, granted. Was awesome. Everything works fine.
Well, it sounds like their launch event went pretty well too.
Yeah. Let's talk about Apple to balance out all this Microsoft talk. They had their earnings call yesterday. Disappointing quarter of record device sales, record revenue, and record earnings. Analysts not happy.
So typical.
Stock took a hit.
Well, yeah. What do you expect? I mean, the headline says Apple profits miss expectations on slower iPad sales. Why are you releasing slower iPads?
Now,
seriously.
You mentioned this in the news fuse. Was it actually a reduction in iPhone sales, or just they missed iPad. The expectations?
Okay. They missed expectations. They increased sales of iPads from quarter to quarter, from year over year. But the number that analysts wanted was 17 million.
And they only got 14 million.
Yeah, they only sold 14 million iPads. So, yeah, that's
this is typical, though. I mean, we do this every quarter, right? Analysts go, they get really optimistic. So they overshoot Apple numbers. Apple comes in with something that's, you know, record sales and profits, and analysts say, well, it's not as good as we thought it was going to be. Because we thought that Apple was one of these companies that will never stop growing at exponential rates.
Yeah. And I even saw some analysts dinging iPhone sales, which were up 58%. And the iPhone 5 was only on sale for 9 days in the quarter.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, that's impressive, considering that before those 9 days started, no one's really buying iPhones, right? Because they're sure that the iPhone 5 is coming out. So the dip is expected.
So is Apple like that kid that comes home and like, look, I got an A? And the parents are all like, could have been an A+, you know?
We thought you were going to get 100 out of 100 right, and you only got 98 right. Yeah. So you're a failure.
You need to work harder, Apple.
Yeah, you have missed our expectations.
Of course, there's always an earnings call, and Tim Cook, as usual, had a couple quotes. He was talking about the iPad mini and praising how great he thinks it is. And he said, we would not make one of the 7-inch tablets. We don't think they're good products. You may think, well, wait a minute, aren't you making a 7? No, it's a 7.85-inch tablet, so therefore not a 7-inch tablet.
Yeah, they kept claiming that it's got 35% more area. And if you've played with a 7.9-inch device versus a 7, it actually is a bit different. But the claim of trying to spin this to go, oh, it's not a 7-inch tablet, whole other league. What other league? You compared your device in the slide to the other guys to say that, yeah, we're better than this, but it's...
It actually rounds up to an 8-inch tablet, which, frankly, could round up to a 10-inch tablet, so it's actually the same size as the original.
How is an 8-inch tablet rounding up to a 10-inch?
Yeah, if you just round up to the nearest 10.
It's the latest accounting principles.
Okay. I mean, it's also the ratio is different, too. I mean, this isn't a 16:9. I think that's actually more of a bigger difference to me.
Well, haven't they all been 4x3? I mean, the first iPad was 4x3, 1024 by 768.
The iPads have, but not other 7-inch tablets that Apple is saying, we're not like those other tablets. They're a little bit smaller, but I also think that because of the way that they look, particularly in landscape mode, it is a different experience.
It's the aspect ratio.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the aspect ratio of the 90s. Staying true today.
Maybe that may be what they're after. I don't know. They asked him about other tablets. He said, I haven't personally played with a Surface yet, but what we're reading about it is that it's a fairly compromised, confusing product. I suppose you could design a car that flies and floats, but I don't suppose it would do all those things very well.
So this new Apple tablet and that new Microsoft tablet and that other 7-inch Nexus one that they keep comparing it to, they just launched the Angry Birds and the web browser too, right?
Yeah.
Okay, just want to make sure I got that.
What was I know that Cook has made something similar argument before about you can combine objects together, but that's not something we should do anyway. It's not a good idea. I think a refrigerator and something else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like he likes these analogies. I'm enjoying that. It's amusing at least. You know, it's not a tirade. But I mean, a car that flies and floats, that's like a pontoon plane or something.
Meanwhile, Google's like, we actually have a self-driving car that flies and floats in our X Lab right now. We had a lot of earnings this week, as you know. We were talking about that. Samsung also had their earnings call and did well, as we mentioned in the news fuse. IDC is letting us know how their sales compare to Apple, because Apple reports their iPhone sales, but Samsung doesn't report their individual unit sales.
Yeah, so both Strategy Analytics and IDC put out numbers. IDC has slightly different numbers, saying that Samsung shipped 56 million. I think Strategy Analytics had a little bit more. Apple had 26.9. RIM, 7.7 million. So still in the top five. ZTE and HTC round out the top five. And for the first time, according to IDC, Nokia is out of the top five. They are just they sold 6.3 million, according to Strategy Analytics. So they're kind of getting walloped by every other company right now.
RIM's like, look, we're third. That's okay, right. It's Nokia that's in trouble.
If you believe that, yeah, that RIM sold 7.7 million units or shipped in the third quarter. And an analyst over at JP Morgan says, Nokia, I got an idea. Be like Ericsson. So this got some interesting press today. JP Morgan analyst Sandeep Deshpande said, Nokia should start thinking about giving up its comeback on the smartphone market and concentrate on networks. That's what Ericsson did in 2001. If you remember, they used to make cell phones. They took their mobile phone unit, merged it with Sony. They did Sony Ericsson for a little bit. Right now, Ericsson's market capitalization is three times that of Nokia. So they've made the shift successfully. And this analyst pointed out that...
Want faster PC performance?
I do.
He did not point that out. But what he did point out was that Nokia that would have to increase Windows smartphone shipments by 448% from the heights of the second quarter just to break even. So they have to, like, go fourfold just to break even in this. A couple of people are being upbeat about this. A couple of analysts, they're like,
how?
Hey.
How are they doing that?
Let's look at this as an opportunity.
Exactly. Nordea analyst Sami Sarkamies said, the only way seems up from here. And also thinks Windows Phone's going to get a boost by Windows
Phone. Down
Nokia,
Windows
Nokia, it looks Nokia like has up. Found its bottom.
You think that's it?
This is the first day of the rest of Nokia's life.
It may be. You know, this is really disastrous news for Nokia. And everyone talking about this being Microsoft's moment with Windows 8. Let me tell you, Windows Phone 8 is seriously Nokia's turn. Everything turns on this moment.
I mean, I think that Nokia was in a bad position when they're stuck with Windows Phone 7. And that got that dead end kind of area. With Windows 8, if when people start going, oh, that's a tablet, the tile interface is everywhere, I think that's still going to do the push. But I don't think Nokia switching entirely to a network-based company is the way to go. I still think they have enough goodwill with that name, and they've reestablished relationships with the U.S. when it comes to carriers. I wouldn't throw in the towel just yet. Maybe next year if they don't break 5%.
So it doesn't work with Windows 8. Windows 9,
no.
And then become an infrastructure company.
No, if you can't, don't go past 8.
Don't go past 8. No. That's just the rule.
Do not collect $200. Do not go past 8.
Okay. Well, I like base 2, so that sounds good to me. Because it'd be that or 16.
Let's take a break. Thank our sponsor for the show, Gazelle. You want that new whatever? Whatever's coming out? There's so much stuff out there. There's a Microsoft Surface that's out. There's all these Windows 8 machines. There's the new iPhone 5. There's the iPad mini. There's Google tablets coming on Monday. You're going to need some cash for all that stuff. Because you're going to buy all of it. I know you. And you got a bunch of old gadgets that you can sell. Now, here's the thing. You're like, well, wait a minute. I need to buy the new gadgets, and I can buy that as I'm like, you know, and then to get the... Just go to gazelle.com. This is simple. Lock in a price for 30 days. You don't have to send them your gadget right away. You just tell them what you've got. You get the quote. You lock it in. You print out the shipping label. Then you wait until you're ready to send them the gadgets. Once you do, you send them your iPhone. You send them your old iPad. You send them your iPod. And they will take it, turn it around in a couple of days, and pay you by check or PayPal. As I mentioned, I did it a lot. Over the summer and piled up a nice tidy sum of cash to help me buy new gadgets. So go to gazelle.com, check it out right now. Even it's risk-free. If you get a quote and you lock it in for 30 days, it's not like people are going to come to your house and take the gadget away from you if you don't send it to them. So there's no reason not to go, because let me tell you, the prices probably are not going to get higher over time. gazelle.com, sell the easy way. And if they ask, where'd you hear about it? Maybe mention Tech News Today. Recycle the easy way. Visit gazelle.com. We thank them for their support of the show. We got more to discuss. And actually, one more earnings report to discuss. But the reason this one's significant is it's a big company not doing as well as we really thought.
Yeah, this is Amazon we're talking about. We mentioned in the news fuse that Amazon had what everyone is pretty much saying is a big fat mess on revenue. Revenue was at $13.81 billion, earnings per share of about 60 cents, although analyst expectations were a loss of just 8 cents on revenues that were higher at $13.93 billion. So what's the deal? Where is this miss? What's accounting for all of this? You know, Amazon's had a very exciting year. Turns out it's Living Social. Loss of $169 million, or 37 cents per diluted share. So 62% of Amazon's losses came from Living Social. Amazon was down up to 10% in after-hours trading last night. This is actually the first quarterly net loss in 4 years. So not only is it like a pretty bad quarter, because the trajectory had changed. But very sort of specific, too. I mean, this was living socials. This is a bad idea. Guidance for the next quarter, not so great. Net sales in the $20.25 billion range to grow between 16% and 31% based on fourth quarter of last year. Operating income is expected to be a loss again between $490 million and $310 million. If you compare that to last year, there was an operating loss as well, but that was only $260 million. So Amazon's pretty much saying, this is a bad quarter, and you know what? We're going to lose some more money in the next quarter, so everybody get ready. Okay, so Living Social. I don't know if any of you guys have used it before. I have. My experience with Living Social is buying a deal because it looked really attractive and then never using it and then actually spending money that I never actually spent.
Yes. That's exactly what I did with the other guys, Groupon.
Yes. And Groupon is another example. Groupon went public almost a year ago to the day and has lost, I think, 84% of its value. So Groupon is not an example of a daily deal site that's doing it right.
And Google's got theirs.
It's almost as if none of these deal sites can do it right.
They got a lot of attention. They got a lot of usage. And you would think, given that all of this anecdotal evidence of people saying, yeah, I bought a coupon and I never used it, that they'd be raking in the dough, because that's breakage is essentially what the business model is here.
Well, the problem is, though, is that someone like me, it's true that that's how it works, but then I just never use it again.
Right.
Because I'm like,
I don't want to waste my time or my money.
I can't be trusted to follow through on this, so I'm just never going to think about Living Social again. So you don't have any repeat customers, or you don't have enough.
In fact, you've got the kind of the worst customer experience in that you know that the reason that it didn't work out for you is because you didn't follow through. The company didn't fail you. The Living Social, the Groupon, the Google deals or whatever didn't fail you. The establishment that you were going to go to didn't. But now you've got that like emotional weight of like, oh, I don't want to do that because I sucked at doing that last time.
But Padre SJ in the chat room is saying, from personal experience, the problem wasn't the consumer side. It was on the business/provider side, at least of Groupon, he's saying. So it sounds like the businesses weren't getting what they wanted out of this either.
That has been a complaint with these daily deal sites since day one, is businesses saying it seemed like such an attractive proposition. We sell, you know, a bag of cookies for half of the normal cost. You get a bunch of customers. But then the day after the deal ends, you get customers coming in and they're mad and it's just a mess. And sometimes you don't actually even recoup the cost that you had that you had lost because you're selling everything for half of its value because then they don't come back again.
Yeah, my sister actually owns a business and did the Groupon thing 1 year, and it was great. The first time she did it, it was great. It brought in all this great business. But the follow-up afterwards, kind of the after effect with that, was that now a large number of people that would potentially frequent her business were kind of used to the fact that, oh, well, she's probably going to go to Groupon again, you know, to put out more of a deal.
Yeah.
And so then she saw her business go down. So then it was almost a necessity to try and do it again just to lure those people back. And after the second time, she was like, this is not worth it at all. I'm actually destroying my business more than I'm helping it.
Wow.
But that's actually like a thing. And you know, as I know in retail and whatnot, it's like if you're going to do a sale or whatever, what you need to be doing is adding value and not reducing your price, because you do that and you just give the perception that like, oh, well, this is actually worth less.
Mm-hmm. Give away a free thing with purchase rather than a discount.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. That's what I'm going to do. Free news with every download of Tech News Today from now on. Also,
truly a daily deal.
Library of Congress is giving you something free. Rights.
Okay. Woo-hoo! Yes, I took on the big heavy story this morning.
Thank you for doing that, by the way.
So the headlines read, jailbreaking now legal under DMCA for smartphones, not tablets. I got people tweeting at me saying, why is this exemption for phones and not tablets? So there was this 69-page document. I've read through a lot of it. So I'm going to try to break it down.
All right, here we go.
So these are exemptions to the DMCA. And an exemption to DMCA means that you can do stuff legally. The easy and non-controversial ones are the assistive technologies for literary works. So if a blind or other person with a disability gets an e-book, they should have access to read aloud functionality. Nobody's really getting upset about that one. Then there's for DVDs, you can circumvent copy protection to build systems to caption the audible portion. So if you're going to build an automated way to have captions, you can do that. So you can rip your DVDs all you want if you're doing that. Then there's the three super controversial ones that people were freaking out about. Wireless telephone handsets, software interoperability section. You can jailbreak your phone as long as you're doing it to run lawfully obtained apps. Specifically, though, in all the explanation, This exemption does not apply to tablets. So you can jailbreak your phone, but you can't jailbreak your tablet.
Now, that seems stupid.
Absolutely.
Why would the Librarian of Congress do that?
Now, they list a bunch of the arguments from both sides, and they explain their reasoning as, the Register found significant merit to the opposition's concern that this aspect of the proposed class
was broad. The Register being the Library of Congress, registered, not the reporting agency, just to be
Thank
clear.
You.
Yeah.
They found that the class was too broad and ill-defined, as a wide range of devices would be considered tablets. So that could include gaming devices or laptops. So this just looks like if the argument was made differently and saying tablets are these devices that are 9.7 inches without a keyboard or whatever you wanted to say.
What about a note?
What about right. one of these guys?
I mean, that's gray area, right?
They're definitely...
it's a phablet.
It's a phone, though. I mean, it's definitely a phone.
The question is, what's the line between a phone and a tablet? Now, there is an actual definition for telephone handsets, so you can probably find that. I mean, I'm not sure what exactly makes the thing different, because I would imagine at some point, when you're doing voice over LTE, that's a data device. That's no longer doing a voice, like traditional voice calls.
Well, they always have all been bits. Mm-hmm. But as we move into LTE, everything, the distinction becomes more and more clear that, yeah, no, everything's just a bit.
But the point is not what we think a phone is or what it should. The point is the Librarian of Congress is saying, I am limited by this law to only make very specific exemptions. And there is no specific definition of anything but a phone. So I'm going to give an exemption for a phone because I can point legally to what that is. But I can't point legally to what a tablet is. Until that's legally defined, I'm not going to give an exemption.
I think just have to wait until the distinction is totally unclear, and we just call them, you know, that device with the screen.
Or a standards agency comes out with a definition or something that the Librarian of Congress can use to say. This is not the Librarian of Congress saying I don't know what a tablet is. It's them saying I can't point to something that is recognizable in a court as a definition of a tablet.
They can't define it, but
it's not a common sense thing, right? Yeah.
It's kind of murky. It also shows that, you know, laws are kind of reactionary. It's very hard to tell because smartphones, as they are now, are about 5 years old. And tablets are two, as we know them now. I mean, tablet PCs have been around for a while. So it's going to be murky for a long time. Then there's your wireless telephone handsets, interoperability with alternative networks. That means unlocking. Now, unlocking was permitted between 2006 and 2010. Unlocking is still fine as long as you buy a phone from the operator or wireless telecommunication network or retailer. No later than 90 days after the effective date of this exemption.
So in other words, they're getting rid of the exemption, but you can still take advantage of the exemption if you buy the phone before the exemption gets eliminated.
They're narrowing it. So the thing is, after January, you must have the carrier's permission to unlock.
Well, but that's not an exemption.
But that means you still can get a phone that can get unlocked. You can ask for it. That's kind of an odd kind of concept.
But that's no different than what you can do now.
Well,
because the carrier could say no.
So this is the weird thing. The reasoning is the marketplace has evolved such that there's now a wide array of unlocked phone options available to consumers. But if the rule before was it wasn't illegal to unlock your phone, wouldn't that tell the carriers to just say it's okay to unlock the phone? Like it seems like if they change the rule that the marketplace will not have as many unlocked phones. Do you see
what I see. You're saying because it was legal to go unlock it yourself – the market responded by saying,
sure.
Well, okay, let's make unlocked phones. I don't know. I think it's prepaid that's really putting more of the pressure on it. But that's a good point.
So do you think that the point of the last ruling the whole time was just to get carriers to sell unlocked phones by forcing them into
unlocking? No, the point of the ruling, this is the thing with the Library of Congress. This is not a person sitting down around the dinner table with you being common sense. The Library of Congress has a very specific set of defined rules they have to follow. And one of those rules is this something that people can't get in any other way?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so
they
before,
lost that.
They couldn't get it in any other way, so they granted an exemption. Now they can get it legally in other ways, so they're pulling the exemption back. That's the problem is with the DMCA, not the Librarian of Congress.
That totally clears it up.
And the last one in the exemptions, DVDs. You can rip them with one giant asterisk right there. So you can rip them to use short clips, and your purpose must be criticism or comment in limited circumstances. So this is limited to non-commercial videos, documentary films, non-fiction multimedia e-books, offering film analysis, and a whole range of educational purposes. You can also strip out copy protection from online video as well. So
if you're like basement film review show where you're not selling any ads, totally fine.
It looks that way.
Or a documentarian who's selling your film and distributing it, as long as it fits the legal definition of a documentary.
And in that long document, they actually explain like the other side of the DVD people who wanted to say, hey, by the way, all you could do, you could take a smartphone, you could record it with your phone, you could point at a television, that's a way to do it, that's a reasonable alternative. You could use screen capture software. And the Librarian of Congress is like, no, that doesn't work that way. Alternatives to ripping don't produce the same high-quality video you need to have a criticism. So you don't have this weird flickering going on when you're trying to explain, by the way, this scene is horrible because the lighting is bad. But I know you can't see it because my smartphone didn't capture it properly.
Yeah, and the Ars Technica pointed out that the craziness of this is that the DMCA makes it illegal to traffic in tools that circumvent copyright protection. Mm-hmm. So even though you have an exemption to rip this DVD in these cases, no one can sell you the tools to do it. Even though you have the exemption to make an ebook available for you to turn it into an accessible ebook that can be read to you, no one can sell you or give you the tool to do it. You have to make it yourself.
Now, when they say make it yourself, do they mean .configure, make install?
Yeah, pretty much. No. That's distributed because
you're downloading apt somebody else's
source. You can't
source.
Apt get it.
Well, no, but what if you get the source and then you can't compile the binaries yourself?
You have to construct it yourself. No one can traffic in it. So giving you the source code is trafficking.
Well, maybe you could do like in the old school days where you'd go to the library and you'd get a book and then you'd start typing in the basic code that's in it.
But that's distributing. It's trafficking. Any kind of trafficking.
But the Library of Congress would love that one.
Any kind of trafficking of circumvention tools is illegal under the DMCA. So it's like, great, blind guy, if you want to go program a ripper that takes the DRM off so that you can turn it into something that can be text-to-speech, fine. But no one can make that and give it to you.
So what you're saying is like the Three Musketeers are totally cool to have their PlayStation 3 level 0 hack, but they can't distribute it.
Right. Well, no, actually the PlayStation's a bad example because game consoles aren't part of this exemption, I don't think, are they?
No, they're not. And the game consoles, they're specifically out of this. I mean, they weren't mentioned. That's how they're out of this. And the last possible thing, by the way, if you're still wondering about the DVD, can you put it on your iPad? No. Did not allow for circumvention for space shifting. So if you wanted to rip your DVD and you came up with your own program to do that, and then you want to put it on an iPad, no.
Nope.
Because there are reasonable alternatives out there. You can go get it yourself or put it on. You can have a portable DVD player because that's a reasonable alternative in our modern society. That's just... The law will catch up. It's just going to take a long time.
Will it? No, that's the problem with the DMCA.
Stuff. Wait a second now.
That's the problem with the DMCA is not going to be changed unless there is a huge campaign and a lot of money going into it.
I'm just wondering if there can be enough holes poked through it, like these exemptions. Can they continue to pile them on? They expire as well.
Yeah, so they took one away this time, too. So, yeah, I mean, there's a limit to how many holes can be poked in it.
I think it's like, you know, two steps forward, one step back. We're slowly making some kind of...
I think it's one step forward, one step back. But we could agree to disagree.
Okay, let's do that.
Apple is pondering a radio service, or so saith Bloomberg.
Yes, and so saith Bloomberg, not for the first time. This is something that we heard about first week of September. And everybody went, oh my gosh, Pandora is doomed because Apple's going to build another Pandora-type service. What's happening? And then we sort of stopped hearing about it. Bloomberg is reporting talks are heating up between Apple and the big music labels like Universal, Warner, Sony, who, according to anonymous sources, have been to Apple headquarters recently to talk about what these deals would look like. At issue, of course, is AdRev. How can the music labels and Apple come to some sort of agreement on the sharing of ad revenue that would make everybody happy? And Bloomberg's saying, this is, you know, we're getting pretty far along in the talk. A deal could be reached by mid-November. I mean, we're talking a couple weeks from now, really. Apple could launch a service in maybe even the first 3 months of 2013, which, you know, I kind of chuckle and go, huh, so maybe that's their new thing in 2013, right? We're like, they just launched a new iPad. What are we going to do in March? Ah, it's going to be the music service. But that's just me wondering what it's actually going to be if they continue to have a March event. So let's think about what Apple might be able to put together that would be better than Pandora. Obviously, most of us are familiar with how Pandora works. It's internet radio, but there are restrictions on how many times you could hear a song that you like, if you have an artist radio station, how often a certain song is played. You can't exactly say, oh, I love the song. I actually want to hear the song three times an hour, that sort of thing, because Pandora is using a license that limits how often users can skip tracks and all that stuff. Apple says, we would like to figure out how to get earlier access to new releases. We'd like more flexibility on what listeners hear because people are used to going to iTunes and buying exactly what they want. So we know that there's a little bit of control that our users are going to want that's going to make something that Apple rolls out a lot more attractive than Pandora, right? Sources say this is something Apple wants to be a standalone app, not just some web-based service that you could access, which Pandora is an app too, but it's primarily
started as a web service. Leaves Pandora a lot of room to continue to compete because Pandora will be available on Google devices, on Windows devices, and this likely will not.
Sure. Now, Pandora, it's funny, without Pandora actually commenting on this at all, and they've said, we don't comment on stuff like this, Pandora shares fell 17% September 7th when this rumor first started circulating. People go, oh, no, you know, Apple's gunning for Pandora now. Then gained 8.4% on October 23rd, just a few short days ago, when Apple didn't say anything about radio service. And all the people who got scared went, wait, no, Pandora, yeah, okay. And then during this week, when this news came out again over the last 24 hours or so, Pandora stock dips again. So it's highly fluctuating.
The key is buy Pandora because, frankly, I think Pandora's going to be fine. Lots of people have gunned for Pandora, and the reason a Spotify or an RDO or another recommendation engine that has lots of other benefits, like its own music store and subscription service, hasn't beaten down Pandora is Pandora is really good. Mm-hmm. When you put in an artist, you get artists that fit. You don't sit there going like, wait a minute, why is this in here? And that is my experience with these other recommendation engines where it's like, we do subscription music really well, and we have this recommendation engine, and they're never very good.
It's interesting what Apple would want because Apple obviously is trying to squeeze as much as they can out of a music label. Is something ringing?
It's your Ring Central phone.
It's your Ring Central phone, Tom. Would you like to answer it?
Go ahead.
Maybe it's Apple. There is no deal. Stop talking about us. What labels will want is something like an upfront fee from Apple just to say, okay, we're going to play with you, Apple. We want an upfront fee because you can afford it, but we also want a percentage of ad sales. There's the whole labels inserting their own commercials to promote their own artists, that sort of thing. Apple could say yes to all of this. It also wants to grow out its mobile advertising platform. And then obviously, if the platform works, it can steer customers back to its iTunes store because music downloads, even though Apple is still dominant in that market, they are slowing because we all have a lot of other options now. This is all coming from Bloomberg, by the way. CNET has another story that says this is not necessarily wrapping up to be announced anytime as soon as what Bloomberg would like to think. They say Apple has offered to pay even a lower royalty rate than what Pandora pays, which is already low. And the music labels aren't going to go for that. The labels don't want to feel like they're getting ripped off or that they're not getting a good revenue share. And then, of course, you've got the whole Internet Fairness Radio Act. That's the name of the legislation that was introduced into Congress that seeks to reduce royalty rates that web radio services must pay for music, which is what almost bankrupted Pandora a few years ago in the first place. And if that were to pass, we'd have a whole different conversation by now. So I kind of think, what if Apple and Pandora were to team up and try to push something like this legislation through that says, listen, these are exorbitant rates and this is not fair. We're a whole different thing than terrestrial rates and change the landscape of the market. You look like you're like, nah.
I'm just thinking it wouldn't make monetize.
I can see if they gave them a better rate than whatever they get from Amazon because, that's what I do is like I do the Pandora thing because you're right. Most of the time, except for when they throw REM in on your Falco station, they're good. And then you just click buy and it's done on your Amazon MP3 and you don't have to think about it. So they've got the ecosystem. It makes sense. And I'd prefer to see Apple go that way. I mean, maybe I'd just buy them from Apple then.
I couldn't see Apple putting the money behind lobbying to make that a difference because I don't think that's not going to make them so much money. Their hardware is what makes them money. So for them to push around laws to do that seems a little strange for them. Mm-hmm. I could see them buying Pandora for the heck of it and then tearing them apart. But that seems like that'd be an awful disservice to all of us who like Pandora. But for Apple to do its own radio station or its own recommendation thing, like basically leverage Genius and to have a streaming audio, that seems like it just has to show up at some point because, I mean, Microsoft has they've rebranded their Zune Music Pass into Xbox Music. It's on everything. Apple needs something of their own that says, oh, by the way, yeah, as long as you're in our ecosystem, we have our own streaming thing. You can click to buy. You can buy songs from Pandora that go to iTunes that way.
Right.
But the only option, Apple's option will be, just iTunes. It won't say Amazon or Google or any other.
Which is good because it's like the Apple is going to have to monetize people like me, frankly, who say cloud is good enough when it comes to music. I'm just not buying stuff anymore. Right now, iTunes doesn't really have anything for me. I'm using the other guys.
So are you saying, them. Though, that it's just like one of those, oh, you have an ecosystem and that's one of the check boxes that you have to have? Like, you have to have a music streaming service, just like having a website.
Well, yeah, like we were talking about the operating systems, right? We all have the type to search. We have every, right now, the SkyDrive, there's Unity, there's, and then there's, what's the other thing? iCloud. There's all these little check boxes at this point, so why not just include this?
Well, yeah, but last time Apple tried to check a box, it was social network, and they put it in iTunes. What was that called?
I liked
Plus
Ping.
Dot demo. Oh, Ping.
Yeah, it was good.
ICMP.
The idea of Apple buying Pandora, too, is that would be...
That's not happening.
And no one's even saying
that's happening.
That.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Let's just say, I mean, that's not necessarily something that Apple would dismantle and ruin, because Pandora is a proven model. You know, I mean, Lala, that's a little bit different, right? That's a startup that had room to grow.
Well, it would be like when they bought Chomp. Chomp went away, but if you look at the App Store, it's Chomp. If Apple bought Pandora, Pandora would go away, but it would be Apple Radio,
sure. And
it would be Pandora. I think that's how that would go down if it were to go down. But I agree with Ayaz. I think Apple probably spends its time trying to get a better rate than everybody else, trying to get a discount, sadly, instead of teaming up. It's a lovely thought, though. I want it to happen. Let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
Wearable robot arms are also something I would like to happen. It's a backpack. MIT's developing it. You put it on, you get 6 arms.
Picture the show Doc Ock from Spider-Man.
Yeah, forget that. There's no actual illustration of it, sadly. It's the handiwork of Federico Parietti and Harry Asada of MIT. And it would be for industrial purposes, for people who need more than 2 hands.
So here's how I feel about this, right? It's got these cameras and it moves the arms, and kind of the idea is like, oh, say maybe you're like a worker, you know, making a building or whatever, and you've got all these like nuts and bolts that you need to like rivet in or whatever it is that you do. I don't know. I've only played SimCity. And they pick them up for you and give, you know, it's like the whole like, hey, can you get me the spanner? And you're like, the other one. I don't know what a spanner is, but they say that on Star Trek.
It's a wrench.
Thank you. And so, okay, cool. So now you've got like a robot that like predicts that stuff and does it for you. Or robotic arms, but now it's like, all right, well, put those guys on some robotic legs and call it a day.
Yeah. Robotic legs, really?
Yeah, I'm just saying they go well with robotic arms.
You can't hug a child with, well, I guess you could. You could hug several
children.
You
just send this guy, this robot can hug for you while you're busy doing other things.
All right. Okay, now for cats mooshing, robotic arms all the way, because cats are just going to love that.
Let's take a break. Thank our other sponsor for today's show, Audible.com, the leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. And for listeners of Tech News Today, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. You've got to have heard about Audible. I use it all the time to clean my house. How, you ask? Because I don't like to clean my house. But I like to listen to books. And so when I get a really good book that I've been listening to in my car on my way home and I don't want to stop, I find excuses to keep listening to the book. So I pull out the vacuum cleaner and I go and I vacuum while I listen to the book. And then I wash the dishes. And then all of a sudden I've got a clean house and I'm happy because I was listening to an audiobook from Audible.
That is way smarter than what I used to do, because I'd just like be driving home and I'm like, oh, there's my exit. Oops,
just
missed my exit. I'd find myself in like Oakland, Alameda, Hayward, and I'm like, where am I going even?
I sit in my parking garage of my building, and sometimes people who have the spot next to me walk up and they see me sitting there and they think I'm really crazy or possibly suicidal. Because I just want to listen to my book.
You're like, look, if you want a clean house, if you want to drive far, far away from your house, or if you want to look like a maniac, try audible.com.
It actually conditioned me to like traffic. I'd be like, oh no, 80 is backed up. Awesome.
Yeah. Try it out for free. It's really great. They have some amazing readers in there. I'm listening to The Dirty Streets of Heaven by Tad Williams right now. The narrator is fantastic. It's an excellent sci-fi book, but just go check it out. audiblepodcast.com/TNT. And get this. Not only can you get a free book of your choice, but there's also a copy of Brandon Sanderson's Legion waiting for you absolutely free at audible.com/Sanderson. So go to both these. First of all, go to audible.com/Sanderson. Get the free copy of Brandon Sanderson's book, Legion. Brandon Sanderson, the guy who finished the Wheel of Time series for Robert Jordan. He's a fantastic author. Get that for free. Then go to audiblepodcast.com/TNT. No trial or credit card required, and get another free audiobook. We really thank Audible for their support of Tech News Today. If you're a current Audible subscriber, let them know that you thank them too. Let's see what's on the calendar.
Supreme Court is going to hold oral arguments in a case testing whether buyers of foreign copyrighted works can resell them in the U.S. without the copyright holder's permission. That's on Monday. Also Monday, it's kind of a big day. Windows Phone 8 launch event is in San Francisco. But that's not all, because Google's event, of course, on the same day, is happening in New York City.
New York
City.
Remind
me again when our coverage starts, 7 a.m.?
7 a.m. Pacific.
Right and early. That's definitely a donut day.
Oh,
I mean, do yourselves
you're
a favor.
Bring us the, that's so
that's,
nice of
it's
you,
more
Sarah.
Of a coffee
Google
day than a donut day. But
a box of joke.
Yeah. A jug of coffee.
Also starting on Monday is All Things D's Deep Dive into Mobile Conference. It's in New York City. It runs on Monday and Tuesday. It's actually sold out, but it's a popular conference. What can you say? And the Microsoft Dev Connections Conference is also happening October 29th, runs through November 2nd at the Bellagio in Las Vegas.
The Bellagio.
That's right. Fancy. So many jewels.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We did our segment on Wall Street Journal's article about dirty cell phones, and thankfully, Dr. Mom has weighed in. Dr. Mom, do we really need to worry about dirty cell phones? Do I need to go clean my cell phone?
Hi, guys. It's Dr. Mom, just for referring to today's show. That bit about the bacterial contamination of the cell phone is not real. Dry, hard plastic just doesn't grow anything. The screens, the grills over the speakers, Mike. What they're really doing is they're saying your hands are dirty, you touch something, you have transfer. I mean, I would certainly not go start napalming your phones or dipping them in, you know, Cydex or some ridiculous kind of disinfectant. Wash your hands. Your phone gets really grungy or dirty. Rubbing alcohol is going to kill just about anything. Oh, well, love the show. Bye.
Whew.
Thanks for diffusing that horrible.
That's awesome.
Horrible.
Thank you for that. Sarah, would you care to read us an email?
I suppose. David Patrick says, greetings. I heard a discussion of swipe and Swift keys on Android. There's a similar product on iOS designed primarily for blind users like me. Flexi, so F-L-E-K-S-Y, is able to determine what you meant to type even if you don't get one letter correct. You just type where you think the letters are based on a QWERTY keyboard, and it kind of works. While it's not a replacement of the iOS keyboard, I wish, says David. It can send text, post to Facebook and Twitter, or use cut and paste to put text in other apps. Just thought you'd find it interesting. It is interesting, especially since you're not actually allowed to make changes to the iOS keyboard itself, which is why there aren't more keyboards in the App Store. But this sounds like extremely helpful.
Yeah, nifty stuff. Thanks for that.
Email from Jason. Apple's Fusion Drive is just using Intel SSD caching technology. It's been around since 2011 on the PC side. It's built into the chipset of certain Intel boards. Just wanted to send that info along because it seems like most people think this is some new technology that Apple invented, which is not the case.
But they didn't call it Fusion.
Right.
Lightning, Thunder.
Right. They didn't invent Thunderbolt either, but they call it Lightning. Thunder and Lightning. Fusion and
FireWire.
Yeah.
They're all very
way better than IEEE.
Jason was among many people who wrote in to let us know about that. So thanks to all of you guys. And that's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Submit a story for coverage on the show. It's our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. If you find a thing that you liked this week on the show and you want to let us know for our best of show, which is actually coming up in just over 2 months, go to twit.tv/best of. You can submit the best moments on any show on Twit. Let us know. And Darren Kitchen, tell us what's up at Hack 5.
Nonviolent protesting with a little something I call the Occupine Apple.
The Occupine Apple.
Serious.
For the 99%?
Yeah, there you go. It can be for anyone.
Excellent. For the 100%.
For the 100%.
That's it for this episode of Tech News Today. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, TNT@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. Nate Langson from wired.co.uk joins us on Monday. We'll see you then.